Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I'm Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
How can do.
Daryl Loomis.
Howdy ho.
And a very special guest we haven't heard from in a while. That's Alice Nelson.
Hello, everyone. Nice to be back.
Yes, nice to have you back.
Thank you.
So, yeah, we heard that currently in your neck of the woods, which is for viewers just tuning in, because we have a pretty geographically diverse cast here. So,
yeah.
Alice, you hail from?
Idaho.
Idaho, yes.
Where in the potato.
Idaho? Where in Idaho?
Nampa. We're about 25 miles east of Boise.
Yeah, I got a lot of family up there, so.
Do you really?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm from Oregon. It's, you know.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, I thought you were being facetious and
frustrated. A rock's throw away.
No, I actually do.
All right, good. So actually, I'm going to, our friend Eric just jumped on, so I'm going to add him as well here. So as he dials in, we are here for the Friday Filibuster, as you may or may not know, and Eric is with us, yes?
Hello.
Yes, all right. So, so we will just get rocking and rolling, I guess, because as I said before I hit record, I am ensconced in yet another compelling Cinemax original series, which I need to rot to. So, Mac, why don't you kick us off and do regale us with tales of your exploits.
Okay, well, this last week has all been all about Comic-Con in San Diego, but we had a great time at Comic-Con, didn't we? All the hobnobbing with the celebrities and the panels.
Yeah, we
panels
have
and
full coverage coming in about 3 to 4 years.
I waited in a lot of lines last week, so that's
that's true.
We went to all the
unpopular panels, the Full House panel we went to.
Archie and Jughead.
The Jughead panel, that was sparsely really attended, stuff. Yes. The Sleepwalker panel was my personal favorite.
So big news out of Comic-Con was they announced the follow-up to Man of Steel is going to be a Batman-Superman movie.
Which theoretically leads into a Justice League movie?
Theoretically, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So Zack Snyder says he's all excited about hopefully building up to Justice League. So
you think is that the end? Is Justice League like, so? How do you start introducing your Wonder Woman and your Martian Manhunters into this mythology? You know,
I don't know.
Is it this way? Is it like, is there a Flash standalone movie too? Is that supposed to come?
It's in development. Who knows if we'll ever see it?
Okay.
So, but for now, and chances are Christian Bale won't be returning as Batman. They're going to recast.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea regardless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, we'll see what they come up with there. Over on the other side of the fence at Marvel, they announced that the villain of the Avengers 2 will be Ultron.
Who I know very little about, but in your comic book opinion, Mac, is that a good choice? Is that a fearsome step up from the villains from the first Avengers movie?
He's a pretty powerful villain. He's a super intelligent, super powerful robot, and he dislikes biological life and wants to just end all biological life and replace it with robot life.
Ah, gotcha. That's right.
So he's James Cameron.
Yes.
Yes.
But I wonder though, because but the end of the last Avengers movie, Thanos showed up for a cameo, and so what happened to Thanos? Why are we getting Ultron and not Thanos? I'm scratching my head over that one.
Now Ultron was built by Ant-Man, correct?
Yeah, but who knows if they're going to keep that in continuity with the movies or not?
But you think so, right? Because they're doing an Ant-Man movie.
Yeah, I think they're not because
really?
Avengers comes out before Ant-Man. I read that.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's a question mark over that one.
All right. Ultron. It's a great name. Ultron.
It is, yes. Let's see. Also from Marvel, but from a different studio, the Spider-Man panel talked about the upcoming sequel. They said Electro is going to be the main villain, and all these other actors they've been casting as villains are going to be like side characters. So I guess they're being wary about the too many characters thing in the sequel.
Gotcha.
Let's see. What else was there? On the Doctor Who 50th anniversary panel, they announced to nobody's surprise that the Daleks will appear in the 50th anniversary.
It's always the Daleks. Friggin' Daleks.
It's always them.
What if the Daleks showed up in the Avengers 2?
Worst ever.
What if those were Ultron for minions?
Maybe as long as they keep them out of Guardians of the Galaxy, I'll be fine.
Actually, and I'm building on your Comic-Con reporting there, I did read up a little bit and watch some footage of the Sons of Anarchy Comic-Con, not panel. Yeah. Not comic-y, I know, but it sounds like – so they got two more seasons left of this next one coming up, and it sounds like things are about to get a lot worse than they get better, FYI. Mm. So.
Let's see. I guess I don't – not really too many major ones after that. Dan Harmon showed up at the community panel dressed as Iron Man. Thought that was pretty funny. see, Patrick Rothfuss's books, Name of the Wind, is being turned into a TV series like Game of Thrones, which the first couple hundred pages of the first book is the main character living as a feral child in the forest. So is that going to be season one? I don't know.
That'd be super compelling.
And Legend of Korra is coming back in September, so that's in the trailer.
Yay! I've been waiting on that forever.
Yeah, so looking forward to that. So those were my highlights from Comic-Con.
Very good. All right. Daryl, do you have any highlights from Comic-Con?
I have no highlights from Comic-Con, unfortunately.
So do you have highlights from anything?
Do I ever?
Or do you have low lights? Or maybe you have low lights.
I do. I have a low light. I watched this week, which I had meant to watch it for a long time, is The ABCs of Death.
Yeah, that is on my Facebook page constantly because I follow Magnet.
Magnet,
you know?
Releasing, yeah.
Constantly on there.
So the concept, for anybody who doesn't know, is that it's a horror anthology of 26 short films, each beginning with one of the letters of the alphabet, and it's 26 different filmmakers, and they were given $5,000 and the letter they had to use and total creative freedom.
And how many minutes do they each run?
About six.
6 minutes, okay.
Yeah, it's just shy of 2 hours.
All right.
So, and there was a lot of negativity towards it, which kind of made me want to see it more, not because I just want to see something terrible. I do enough of that. But because I couldn't imagine that, because there's some really talented people on this thing. So I couldn't really imagine that they were 0 for 26 in this. And so I really wanted to see what they were doing. And it's a mixed bag. A couple of them, three or four, are brilliant. Three or four are abominable. But of course, some of those are from like the director of Deadball and Vampire Girl versus Frankenstein Girl. So really, what do you expect?
I have no idea what you just said, but I'll just go.
Mac, you reviewed Deadball, correct?
Oh yes, did I? Yeah.
Yes. It's the same. It's the same thing. The problem is with 6 minutes is you can't really do horror in that length of time.
Right.
You can't build any suspense. It's more like joke telling. You know, you have a setup and then a gag. And that's fine with me. The one that really worked as horror was the one by Xavier Jean, who directed Hitman and The Divide, which I thought was brilliant. And he made one that was pretty unsettling and fairly disgusting.
Which letter was that?
X.
Ooh.
X. Oh, okay.
The xylophonist?
It's X for XXL. Is what that one's called.
Okay.
Let's see. One of the guys who does Metalocalypse and Venture Brothers did one. And it's basically – that was one that a lot of people really complained about. But if you enjoy the humor of Metalocalypse and the Venture Brothers, it's that. It's just chaos and mayhem and pretty funny. You know, some are better than others. Most of them are, you know, range between pretty good to mediocre. But all in all, you know, if you're going for 26, you know, if you're shooting at 26, it's, you know, it's about what you'd expect. But some of it is more comedy than horror. So, you know, take it with a grain of salt.
All right.
I've seen it too, and I agree. It's a mixed bag, but it's interesting.
All right, very good, Eric.
We'll take it back to comic books for a second. So the week leading up to Comic Con, I began to get that comic book itch, you know. So I got my cream and my medication. For that's an obvious joke. No, anyway, so I tracked down through our library. The second and third volumes of the Nightfall series from way back.
Yes.
It was 20 years ago now.
That's right.
Was that?
That's pretty much like the only series I read ever. So
yeah. Last year before Dark Knight Rises came out, I picked up the first volume because they were just re-releasing them with some extra stuff in them. But I never picked up the second one because I heard it was so-so, and then or the third one. So I'm reading them now. I'm reading the second one, and it is very so-so. This is the Batman. Bruce Wayne is his back is broken. He's off doing something somewhere. They don't actually include those comics in this collection. And this is all Jean-Paul Valley, Azrael, yeah. As Batman and his night quest, it's called, and it's not very interesting. I'm having a tough time getting through it.
Well, that's probably why we never really hear from Azrael again much, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it'll be interesting to see what happens once Bruce Wayne comes back. He's a very harder edge Batman. He shoots shuriken at the bad guys, and the police have to stop him from killing people and all that kind of stuff. And that stuff's fine. I mean, I like that kind of inner conflict. But they introduce all these terrible villains that I had never heard of before. There was the one I was just reading today. They were called the Mac. You might have to help me out here. I'm turning to you because you're a comic book guy. The Maniacs, the something Maniacs, M-A-N-I-A-X-E, and they were apparently a former punk band turned thugs.
Nice.
But they're clearly modeled after they're like punk Three Stooges. like there's one guy who clearly has Larry Fine's hair, and another guy they called Surly Schmo.
Huh?
And they're just, I mean, it's dumb. It is so dumb.
It was the 90s.
I do remember that. Didn't Azrael have some kind of weird, something in his head, like the system or something?
Yes.
I remember thinking that was semi-interesting. So
yeah.
I don't remember Maniacs.
That stuff's actually good. He has this.
Like the Order of Saint Valens or something.
Saint Dumas.
Dumas. Yeah, man.
Yeah, yeah.
All right.
So yeah, it was all right. So you got Saint right. Yeah, basically, like from the time he was a baby, his father was like basically hypnotizing him or like turning this. Of loading this program in his head so he could continue as this avenging angel. So he has this like assassination stuff in his brain, and he's trying to kind of balance that with what Batman's supposed to be. And he changes the costume and makes it more kind of armored and stuff. And all that stuff is good. It's just that there's all these. I'm running into all these weird storylines and all these weird characters that are just.
I would
so
like to learn more about Maniacs.
Oh no, it's the something. The malevolent Maniacs. That's what it was. So it's kind of dumb. I want to kind of push through because this is like, this volume is like 600 something pages and I'm about three quarters of the way through. And then the final collection is about the same length. So, I got to just keep going through this so I can get to the part where Bruce Wayne comes back.
If you're a villain group and you're forced to use the adjective malevolent, doing it.
No, it was from when they were a punk band called the Malevolent Maniacs, then I guess punk died or something, and they became thugs, and then
All right.
Punk will never die.
I mean they do Three Stooges stick where he like pokes him in the eye, and it's dumb.
See, in the early 90s, a lot of comics' hottest creators went off and did their own characters. And earned a lot of success. So people working for Marvel and DC didn't want to create new characters and give to the company. So new characters that were introduced in the early 90s were all like really lame, which is where you get Malevolent Maniacs from. Yeah.
That makes sense. Like,
interesting.
It's probably not, Azrael Batman's fault, but it's just like the confluence of all these things. Like, you're not really Batman, and these characters are dumb, kind of all can do.
Now, this is the Butthead.
Oh, he's in the next issue.
Yeah, Butthead. Azrael fights Butthead. Okay. All right. All right. Well, we look forward to your next 1,200 page romp. Alice, I'm sure there's been a lot that we haven't heard from you recently, but any highlights you want to hit? Any summer movies you've seen that have grabbed you, perhaps? Or
I did see Pacific Rim.
And where did you land on Pacific Rim?
I thought the monsters and the fighting and the robots were good. I thought the story was kind of lame. and that the acting wasn't very good. And those are good actors. I just thought they didn't have any kind of story to work with. And it's unfortunate because I love Guillermo del Toro. I just don't think he pulled off a good story in this film. I hope he has the chance to do, you know, Pacific Rim 2, because I think it's an interesting storyline. I just don't think it worked in this, you know, particular movie.
Well, that's kind of where we landed as well, Matt, yeah. Right? We were like, yeah. Just some really cool concepts that,
yeah, that didn't pay off.
Yeah, it didn't pay off. It didn't come together. Yeah, a lot of shouting by Idris Elba.
A lot of shouting.
And
boy, the faces that Charlie Hunnam kept making were...
A lot of faces. And I like Charlie Hunnam. I want him to do too, because I
love Sons of Anarchy, yeah. But he was kind of a distraction in this one with those faces he kept making. But,
Idris Elba needs
have
to use his inside voice more.
And we're sort of on the late freight on this one, but we've been going through since Netflix has 8 of the 9 seasons of The Office. We started watching it because I didn't watch it in its original run. I remember seeing the English version and I liked it. And then when the American version started, I thought Michael Scott was too much to take. But then we actually watched the last 5 or 6 episodes of the final season and really enjoyed how they sort of wound up the story. So then we wanted to see how they got to this point. And so we're on, we went through it pretty fast. We're on season 7, almost to season 8. And I've enjoyed it. Michael Scott, you know, it pays off because they explain, you see in snippets of some of the episodes why Michael Scott's the way Michael Scott is. You know, he had a pretty tough childhood. People teased him. And so he craves this kind of attention, which makes him like a small child at times. But then there are other times where he really knows his employees and he's a good boss. So we've been enjoying that too.
I don't hold your high hopes up for the last couple seasons, I will say.
Yeah.
And we won't think less of you if you skip over that. Yeah. It's a little rough. The water
I fell away from the show once they finished out the Jim and Pam storyline. Like once they got married, I kept watching it because it had been that long. You know, you might as well just see it through. I finally gave up on that, but I have since gone back and watched all but the final season. those last couple of years just are kind of intolerable.
Yeah. I just don't know what they're doing. I just don't think they were lost.
They went on too long. It just went on too long.
All right. I guess I'll use – before I talk about what I've been up to, which will intersect in the stuff we've got coming up for the site, I will just say I just read that apparently they're remaking Kickboxer and Bloodsport. just this news. Just saw this news here. So, yeah.
Does it give a star for Bloodsport?
I don't think so. I don't see any of that stuff.
There's not really a kickboxing guy in the movies these days.
Well, I mean, is there really any martial arts guy? I mean, you would think it used to be...
Yeah, no, not really.
I mean, I know there's the guy from The Raid who I love, but I don't think he's got mass market appeal. And then, man, our buddy from Ong back there certainly fell off the... planet. So.
Wait, here we go. It's Jonah Hill, apparently.
Jonah Hill, yeah.
There you go.
That is
that's
ingenious casting.
It's going to be a comedy set in the high school.
Michael Cera and Jonah Hill team up.
as long as somebody does the splits and hits a nut shot, exactly. I'm sure that will happen.
And Channing Tatum's online for kickboxing. So we're good.
There you go.
Speaking of Saved by the Bell and Kickboxer, and if you ever watch Kickboxer again, Van Damme's brother looks just like A.C. Slater, by the way. Just take that and we'll...
Good genes,
yeah. So anyway, but I will tell you, so here's my little transition as well to stuff we got coming for the site. So I wrapped up my first original Cinemax series that I was talking about last week called Banshee, submitted that review. That's right, I gave it perfect scores for the story and acting, and I don't care what you think of me. It was the most entertaining series I've seen in a long, long time. I mean, is it like as well made as something like Game of Thrones? Of course not. But man, from moment 1 to moment 10, it was just super cool. I had just a great time with it. So highly recommend Banshee. And now I'm watching Strike Back Season 2, another Cinemax original series. And the first Strike Back was just almost became a parody because it was so Cinemax-y. It's like they had some cool characters, they had some cool plots, but, I mean, it would just Like, it would just all of a sudden turn, I think I mentioned in my review, it would just turn into the backstage of the Adult Video Awards. I don't know where. It's like just too much. It was just too much. So this current season, they've really mixed it up. So instead of, like, just one-offs, in the first season, it was, like, a lot of one-off episodes, Villains of the Week, it was a series of two-part stories. So there's two episodes that told one kind of, you know, condensed story, and then they moved on to another two-part story. But this one, it's one season-long arc, like one season-long mission. Actually, it reminds me kind of like of 24. It's not real time or anything like that, but, you know, they're on this one mission. They're chasing this one thing. There's this one villain. And it works really – it's working pretty well for me. And it seems like – I mean, it's still Cinemaxy here and there, but it doesn't seem like they're a slave to just, you know, just all of a sudden going from cool action thriller to – softcore pornography all of a sudden, so they don't do that as much, so things seem a little more organic. So I've been really into season two so far of Strike Back, so we'll see if Cinemax they've been able to take, I think they've been able to carve out a niche for themselves with their series, and they've been hugely entertaining. But again, I cannot recommend Banshee enough. What a cool ass show that is.
What is Banshee about?
So basically, Banshee's the name of a town, a fictional town in Pennsylvania, ruled by a former Amish, someone from the Amish community who was shunned for killing a dude with a ball peen hammer. And it's pure pulp, but he's great. He's got this sidekick who's this socially awkward, lethal killer. He's great. And our anti-hero was released from prison, and he goes to Banshee looking for his former lover, girlfriend, who they had split 15 years ago during a heist. And one thing leads to another, circumstances happen, and he ends up assuming the identity of the sheriff of Banshee. I wouldn't ruin how that happens, because that's pretty great. But the hook that works so well in this is, like, he has no idea what laws are, so he just, it's like total frontier justice. He'll just, like, throw suspects into the walls and he's just getting these huge fights, and all of his deputies just stare at him, dumbfounded, but he's the sheriff, so what are they going to say, you know? So it's super memorable. It builds up to something really cool, and highly recommended Banshee. So, two Cinemax shows that I've been pleasantly surprised by. Certainly nothing, you know, to watch with your 8-year-olds, but, you know, but something I've got a big kick out of. So, Mac, I'll pitch it over to you for stuff you've got coming out.
Yeah, the review is already on the site. I've got this sort of quirky TV show. This one's made in Canada. It's called Todd and the Book of Pure Evil. Mm-hmm. it's comedy. It's basically taken the same formula as like Buffy the Vampire Slayer, group of high school outsiders who have supernatural evil going on in their school and only they can stop it. But it's more like really subversive, and it's really, really R-rated. So there's swearing and there's like dirty jokes, and there's, you know, drug references, so it's pretty lowbrow. It's not exactly intelligent viewing, but I'll admit I did laugh a lot. there's a lot of funny bits, and the cast is really like likable and energetic, so if you like your sort of horror on the more goofy, cheesy side, I think you'd probably get a kick out of the show.
Nice. All right, Carol?
The big thing I got this week is out from Raro Video, who releases near Criterion quality editions of totally obscure Italian movies. I've got the Fernando De Leo Italian Crime Collection, Volume 2. It's a 3-disc set, 3 Blu-ray set, including the great Shoot First, Die Later. The guy's basically the king of Italian action. Sweet car chases, POV shots of getting beamed over the head with, like, a huge stick. Lots of violence, corrupt cops. It's basically everything you want in a cop movie. And the release is fantastic. I mean, it's like I said, they're near Criterion quality. Beautiful transfers, great sound. Really just tops all the way around.
Very good. Eric?
This week I'm reviewing the second season of the History Channel show, How the States Got Their Shapes. I don't know if any of you are familiar with it. My wife and I watched the first season. I think it's on Amazon Prime is the video. And it's hosted by Brian Unger, and it's kind of a semi-educational series that kind of looks at how United States, how the individual states both got their shapes initially, and then just how different areas of the country are, you know, unique, whether for geography or for cultural aspects or whatever. Very interesting show, the first season. For the second season, they changed the format up a bit. It's no longer an hour-long show. It's half an hour. And each episode is sort of like two opposite things that are kind of presented as at odds, and then they sort of use that to talk about, you know, the differences, the different cultural things. So it could be like North versus South, blue collar, white collar. Hatfields and McCoys did an episode on that. It's pretty interesting. I think it's worth checking out. The first season I think is especially good. This one I think it felt like some studio notes came down and they decided to switch up the format. Although they may just have run out of things to say about how Utah ended up looking like Utah, which is totally fair. I'm glad they were able to continue it because Unger's a pretty likable guy and it's a cool show. So
nice. All right, Alice, how about you?
I just turned in a BBC period piece from 1975 starring Patrick Stewart, and he actually has hair. It's called North and South,
oh, yeah.
And it's about sort of the Industrial Revolution in England and the haves and the have-nots and the nouveau riche and the old money. And he's, you know, he's a good actor, but you could tell he's sort of at the beginning of his career here. He's a little bit over the top and kind of hammy in his acting, but you can see seeds of the Picard coming through. It's actually probably not a big budgeted miniseries, but the acting is fine, and good story, very interesting. It's much more interesting than I thought. When I first got it, someone was telling me about it, and I thought it was because they redid it again in 2004, and I thought it was that one, and then I get it, and it's like, oh no, 75 is going to be awful, but it turned out to be very good. It was I felt much like a stage play. Everything took place in one room pretty much, no different camera. One camera, it was like the actors playing to the audience instead of the cameras. It was very well done. I enjoyed it quite a bit.
All right. Well, at least someone did, so I'm glad it was good.
Such.
All right, good. Let's move on. Mac, let's move onward and upward. What do you say?
Sure, let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. You at home can play along. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the tab for the upcoming DVD releases. From there, we're going to hit the link for the cover art gallery for July 30th. And just talk about whatever we see on the list.
There's some fun stuff on it this time. There's your Banshee, Dave.
Yep, yeah, there it is.
Banshee.
And The Devil's Backbone, an older Guillermo del Toro movie, which I'm going to have to pick up.
Have you ever heard of George A. Romero's Knight Riders?
I have not.
The games, the romance,
cover.
The spirit, Camelot is a state of mind.
It's got an absolutely choice cover.
It's a great cover, yes.
Has anyone seen G.I. Joe?
I have not, no.
I was just wondering.
That's the new one that came out this year, yeah. I missed it.
Yeah, me too.
I threw it on the request list, but someone else beat me to the punch, apparently.
Damn them.
I know.
The Incredible Melting Man, which is the awesome, right. Gross movie that I talked about last
week. A lot of that, for sure. How about Space Warriors? That looks pretty terrible, huh?
Yeah, Space Warriors. Space Warriors, that cover reminds me for some reason of Space Truckers.
Is that Danny Glover, isn't it?
It looks like
it
Danny
is.
Glover.
Danny Glover.
And Vera Sorvino.
Yeah. That's a good lineup.
Dermot Mulroney, man, that is a bunch of slumming actors.
Paycheck must have been good.
It doesn't look like it.
it looks like... Is that a missile? Are they launching missiles? Or is that I can't tell. That's a rocket,
that's
right?
A rocket.
Sometimes a rocket is just a rocket.
Sometimes a rocket is just a rocket. That's
true. Flying a little low, though. Those kids that are apparently the people in the movie.
It looks like a space camp movie.
Yeah, space camp.
For the director of Soul Surfer, Will.
Yeah, I think it's a family movie. It's no Knight Riders. That's what it is.
Clearly no Knight Riders.
Sorry, Ed Harris, by the way. Ed Harris is in this.
Oh, wow.
That is an awesome cover, man.
And Tom Savini.
I'm going to have to get that just for the cover. That is fantastic.
John Carpenter's The Fog is coming out on Blu-ray. Yeah, it's a classic.
Yeah. There's my Fernando De Leo collection.
Go check The Next Generation Season 4 on Blu-ray.
Where's that?
Oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah.
This is when they finally got rid of Wesley Crusher.
Oh, sad. Too bad. Yeah.
I can't believe it. It was crazy how they killed him off, too. It was just like, I'm kidding, right? He didn't die, did he? Yeah. Did I make that up?
You're remembering this differently from how I remember.
That's right.
I was waiting to hear how he died.
So Moriarty came for someone to laugh. Holodeck and slit his throat, right?
Anna Troy ate him.
It was the Gorn, right? He came back.
All right. Well, yeah, pretty eclectic, so feel free to peruse, and purchase. So inadvertently seasoning release of the week. Mac, what you got?
Can I go before someone
tells me? We'll let you go, absolutely.
Black Rock.
All right, very nice. Mac.
Let's see, how about Lupin the Third, Woman Called Fujiko?
Okay. All right. Daryl?
I'm going with the Big Comedy Couch.
The Big Comfy Couch?
What?
The big comfy couch.
Whatever.
Big comedy couch.
Looks like comedy
that,
for
that's
the
that show about the psychiatrist who it's what Dr. Katz is called in Germany, I think.
Gotcha. All right, the big comfy couch, whatever.
That's better.
I think the big comfy couch actually works better for you.
So. It does, too.
Yeah. Eric?
I guess I was going to do comfy couch. I'm going to go with Cloudburst.
That was my other one, too. The cover is pretty inadvertently sleazy, too.
It is.
It's like Broke Hip Mountain.
Very good.
I'm out.
I got nothing to top that. I'm not even going to bother going, so let's continue on. I can't top Broke Hip Mountain. So let's go to our ambush topics. We're making excellent time here. So, random topics showing each other for mirth and mayhem. Daryl, why don't you go first?
All right, I'm going to go with movie sequels that never should have been.
Sequels that never should have been. That's a good one.
Yeah. I'll go, because I just saw this on TV the other night, and it was awful. Poltergeist 2.
Yeah, Poltergeist 2 is really bad.
It was horrible.
Not as bad as the third one. Yeah, there was a third one. It's pretty bad. It's a pretty big step down.
All right, I'm going to go with the only correct answer in this, and that is the Blair Witch Project Book of Shadows.
Oh, that's so bad.
I just totally missed just the most obvious cash grab, and that's saying a lot, I think. I mean, I did see it. I have no functioning recollection of it at all.
It's very different.
It's not a documentary. It's a straightforward. Yeah. And it's like they're doing. I think they're doing like tours of where the Blair Witch. I think that's sort of. Meta, right?
They sort of had this idea that was kind of interesting. That like the movie came out and it brought all these people to this place and this tourism industry built up around it, which is kind of an interesting place to start another kind of movie in the same vein as the first one. But then they kind of mix the found footage stuff with. Just, straightforward what you see, standard film stuff. Yeah,
there was no book in the movie.
No book.
That's true. That was the other
very few scenes.
The only reason I saw it, because I didn't like the original Blair Witch Project in the first place, but I was mostly disappointed because the Todd Berlinger, who was this really great documentarian, made it. I think it was his first fiction film, and man, I hope he never makes another one. The Paradise Lost movies are great, and My Brother's Keeper's great. I mean, he was a hell of a documentarian, so I don't know.
All right, Mac or Eric?
Let's see. There's a lot of possibilities here.
I'm gonna go with while Mac is thinking. I'm gonna go with every Air Bud related movie after Air Bud.
Including the first one.
I mean, every spin-off.
No, Air Bud, the first Air Bud's amazing.
Yeah, the Buddies.
All the Buddies. I'm going to go with all the Buddies movies. Because to be fair, I've never seen Air Bud Plays Football and whatever they call them. But all the Buddies movies are just a complete. Yeah. They're a desecration of the memory to the memory of the great Air Bud. Dog who could play basketball.
Yes.
The dog played basketball.
Get some skills.
But there are so many possibilities for this, so many answers for this category, and
so many.
I think the floodgates are open. Teen Wolf 2. starring Jason
Bateman. Ooh,
yes, oh,
yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah,
that's
kind
of painful. Yeah.
That's painful.
Oh, just barely related to the first one, right?
Barely.
Like he was
related.
A distant cousin or something.
Yes. Yeah. We all love Jason Bateman around here. Don't get me wrong. He was a wrestler or something, right?
Yeah, he was a wrestler.
Oh, man.
Yeah. A wrestler development?
I got them tonight.
Maybe should have checked out with Brooks.
I should have checked out. I tried to drop the mic.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, I guess I'll go with the Aliens versus Predator Requiem.
That's excellent.
Ooh, yeah.
Aliens versus Predator was such a great concept that kind of biffed out as a movie, and then they made that second one, and the hero was the pizza delivery boy, and every shot was so dark you couldn't tell what you were looking at.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. And like in Blu-ray, in high definition, watching it in, like, a cave, you still can't stop jumping on.
And, you know, you got Ellen Ripley, you got, what was Arnold in Predator? It was Dutch, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Danny Glover in Predator 2, you got all those great actors, and then you go from them to the pizza delivery boy. And yeah. It didn't work.
Good call. I mean, I really think Aliens vs. Predator kind of sucked big time, too. I thought it was really disappointing. But at least you can see stuff. I'll give you that. All right, Daryl.
All right, I'm going to go with what might be my vote for my least favorite movie ever made, is The Exorcist 2.
Oh.
Which is ungodly hilarious. I mean, don't get me wrong. I've seen it seven or eight times.
The camp is off the scale. Yeah.
But it is.
Such
it
a tonal difference, right?
It's just pathetic. And, it, you know, everything that, like, whenever anybody would laud Linda Blair in the first Exorcist, you know, for how good she did as a young girl. She's only a couple of years older in Exorcist 2, and it's like she just forgot how to act completely. It is one of the worst performances I've ever seen, and it's got James Earl Jones as a Nigerian witch doctor.
Awesome.
Oh, hey, boy.
Real quick, Exorcist 3, your thoughts?
I like Exorcist.
Me too.
I think it's really underrated.
It's freaking scary. It is freaking scary.
It's really weird and
old lady crawling on the ceiling. Scary.
Yeah. Yeah. And the scene where
Pruning shears. Scary. Patrick Ewing is in that movie, by the way.
Patrick Ewing in that movie?
I believe so.
No way.
I think he is. I don't
check. Lots of shots.
Okay.
Yeah, no. Exorcist 3 is fantastic. Exorcist Dominion is not so fantastic.
Yeah, it's okay.
But Exorcist 3 would be my guess for one of my picks for underrated movies.
Yeah. Well, that's directed by William Peter Blatty, the author of the first
author
movie.
Of the original.
Oh, yeah.
That great of a book in the first place. But
one more sequel I got, it just jumped out of me. It would have to be Conan the Destroyer.
Toho and the Destroyer. Terrible.
So terrible. Unbelievably bad. So bad. Or any of the Superman movies following the first Superman.
Nope. Okay, no. Superman 3 is still the best. Best Superman movie ever made.
Okay, let's keep moving.
Apparently Superman 4, just like this is like the anniversary.
Is it really?
It just came out like yesterday, whatever year ago. Yeah.
It's like Nuclear Man, is that who that was?
And that's right.
Don't pretend you don't know.
You know. It's true, the special DVD edition comes in a marked pillow head. Okay, let's move on. Mac, why don't you keep this train rolling?
All right, well, in honor of Comic-Con happening over the last week, scenes that take place where the characters are standing in line.
I was just thinking about this, but there's several scenes in Seinfeld that happen as they're waiting in line for movies.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And the movies themselves are very funny, like when they're standing in line for sack lunch. or the English patient or whatever. So like a lot of dialogue happening. Actually, a lot of Seinfeld, like a lot of the greatest moments of Seinfeld happen in lines or while they're waiting. Like when they're in line waiting for the chocolate babka, right?
I mean, yeah.
Happens
there, but,
love that show. Yes, so good stuff going on there.
Big Bang Theory, when they're waiting in line to see the 21 seconds added to Raiders of the Lost Ark. And they don't get in, so they steal the reels. So.
Speaking of Wesley Crusher.
Exactly. Ah, yes. Exactly.
I'm going to go with one of the great line scenes in movie history, the line scene in Annie Hall. When Woody Allen and Diane Keaton are in line, and the guy in front of him is a blowhard talking about movies, and he knows that he's wrong, and he's talking about Marshall McLuhan, and he says, well, I happen to have Marshall McLuhan right here, and he reaches out and he takes him out from behind a stand, and the guy tells him off.
Nice.
That's great. That's great. That's a great scene. Great movie. Also, Air Bud is great. It must be a line from Air Bud.
Is there a big line at the kill shelter?
All right, I'm going to go with, in Arrested Development, the line that develops as a result of Ann Veal's protest for Dangerous Cousins.
That's good, yes. Yes. Not again,
this good. Isn't a Mark Cherry moment.
Is there a line for the, the Tunnel of Hell, indubitably, right?
Yeah,
Love Indubitably Hell, or something like that. I'm going to the Love the Tunnel of Indubitably Hell. All right, Mac, to you.
All right, well, I guess I'm bringing it back once again to Wesley Crusher. For the, I think it was the second or third season of The Guild, in which heroes from The Guild are waiting for the new expansion pack to come up at the store. And Will Wheaton's character and his guild gets in line in front of them. And the character Vork, who's my favorite character in the show, he has this great moment. And I actually have the quote right here. He says, "Let me offer you a historical perspective. At the beginning of the Common Era, people attending events gathered in mass, clustered and clumped together in an unorganized manner. After several thousand years of this, they slowly gravitated to the back of individual fellows and began to stand one behind one another in a horizontal fashion, forming what is now commonly referred to as the line."
Good. He's a really funny character. That's a good show.
He's the best, yeah.
That's a really strong show. Are they doing it anymore? They're not, are they?
They're doing one more season, and then they're
ending. Are they going to do one more season?
Yeah.
That's a quality program.
All right, Eric, why don't you go next?
All right, well, I got new glasses recently, and they seemed to kind of slide down my face, so I took them back to Sears where I got them, and had them wanted to adjust the frames. The woman took it in the back, adjusted the frames. They're kind of like this plastic acetate, so she was working on it. Brought them out, put them on, and realized that the lenses in both sides have been cracked because of the heat that she used to adjust the frames.
No.
So the lenses are being redone right now. I'm wearing my old glasses. I can't see as well. So, glasses.
Glasses. Excellent setup.
I would be really, really, really angry if that happened to my glasses. I don't know how I would react.
Yeah.
It's a long saga.
Sounds sordid.
I'm saving it for my three-part epic miniseries.
So do sunglasses count?
The frames.
Any glasses.
Then it's got to be They Live, right? It's got to be the
fashionable
eyewear and They Live.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm glad they developed contact lenses on the fly there, I'm sure. Roddy Piper appreciated that. But, yeah, obviously those were pivotal in the overthrow of the alien interlopers.
Roddy, you can't beat him.
Nope. unless you're Keith David, right?
Or Hulk Hogan.
Richard Gere in American Gigolo. Silence.
I've never seen it.
Either. Sorry. I got nothing for it. I mean, I can picture Richard Gere with glasses.
They wore a lot of sunglasses in American Gigolo. That's what
right,
I remember.
All right. From it.
Yeah. Gigolos tend to wear sunglasses, I think, experience with
them. Fired.
I'm going to go with A Christmas Story, when Ralphie nearly does indeed shoot his eye out, and the ricochet comes in and breaks his glasses, and he cries.
That's good.
Let's see. The Muppets gave us Dr. Bunsen Honeydew, who wears his glasses, and he's very interesting because there is actually no eyes.
Yes.
Underneath the glasses.
That's right.
That's why he needs glasses.
It's just those are his only eyes are the glasses, and every once in a while they'll do a gag where he'll like lift up the glasses to look at something to reveal that there's no eyes underneath them.
And then he's like a Cenobite from Hellraiser, you know?
Jim Henson's Hellraiser is something I would pay to see.
Awesome.
There's a sequel that didn't really rev up.
Ah, that's been great. Either that or Hellraiser Babies, one of the two.
Hellraiser Babies would be rad. I would absolutely watch Hellraiser Babies. Animated the whole bit.
Good stuff. Oh, boy. Okay, so we go to Godfather when Mo Green gets it at the end.
It's good. Mm-hmm.
Shot in the eye. Glasses didn't look that bad, but
no, it's good. That was a simple yet unsettling death scene. Absolutely.
And a cleverly referenced in one of the only sketches I remember from Mad TV, one of the early seasons they did Rankin Bass's Rankin Bass, Martin Scorsese, like Godfather style mashup, and one of the scenes was like Herb was like one of the elves wearing glasses getting shot through the eye.
Nice. One final Seinfeld thing occurs to me when George got ladies' frames and he pawned them off on the blind gentleman. I'll go next here, so we'll give Alice plenty of time to formulate her first amphistopic coming back. But obviously, much of a good amount of criticism has been leveled at Man of Steel for a lot of the collateral damage and the high death tolls. So give me a sequence in a film with collateral damage that would surely lead to huge death tolls, but you would never know, or it never happened, or you never saw it, or they wrote it off. But a sequence full of damage, widespread destruction, but very little visible loss of life.
I just saw It's a Good Day to Die Hard.
Oh, yeah.
And there's this, which I enjoyed.
Hey, there you go. Welcome to the club. There's a club of two now.
There you go. Woohoo! And there's a scene where he steals this SUV, and he drives it off a bridge, and he drives over cars and trucks in order to get to his son and save him.
That's true.
There has got to be some crushed people in those cars.
I think so.
Yeah, but we never see it.
That's true. Although, Mac, you got a slight kick out of that movie, too, right?
Yeah, it was not the best movie ever, but it was fun.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, similar to Alice's suggestion there, just recently we had Fast and Furious Part 6.
Yes.
With the tank chase. And there's like one or two shots where we see someone getting out of their car before the tank crushes the car. But the tank sure did crush a lot of cars.
Like a lot of cars being driven on the road, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, I remember thinking, wow, they're kind of going for it in this movie.
But, you know, I guess those one or two shots of the one person running from the car before it crushes, you know, that makes it all okay, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Supposed to just, it's like the little parachutes and G.I. Joe scene in the background, you know?
That's right, the exploding helicopters and the parachutes, right.
Yeah, so yeah, you can blow up as many airplanes as you want, just as long as there's that one little parachute in the tiny corner of the screen, then it's okay.
Or you shoot all of the Cobra troops in their hands. Yeah, a lot of troops got shot in the hands in that show. So.
All right, well, I've only seen this once when it aired, and this is my recollection, the final episode of the TV show Sledgehammer.
Oh, I love
it. I seem to remember
that.
Ending with him like setting off an atomic bomb and like destroyed everything.
Was the season one finale.
That was the season
one
finale.
Oh, see,
they came back.
That was
they filled it out because they thought they were going to get canceled. and so they decided to do that. And then they got renewed on on a budget where they had to shoot on like 16 millimeter, and it just looks super cheap. I reviewed that a couple of years ago. Show holds up. The way they come back from it isn't very smooth.
I just said 5 years earlier, and then just went back.
That's right. Yes,
went back
that's
to
right.
normal. Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Huh. Great show though. One of my
favorites. Well then maybe it fits the topic even better than I thought, because I thought, well, you know, there you go.
All right, I'm having a hard time with this one, but, and I could be wrong about this because it's been a while since I've seen it and I didn't like it very much, but if I remember correctly, Cloverfield, for all of the knocked down buildings and destruction that the big monster causes, there's basically no body count.
That's true. There's only one or two, I think, that we actually see die on screen.
There's only one or two, and when, you know, they go and they save the guy goes and finally saves his girlfriend. She and this other guy are basically alone in this office building where there should be hundreds of bodies.
Mm-hmm.
That's true.
Yep.
All right, good. I'm not wrong. Got confirmation.
See, I'm going to go. My favorite one was in Con Air when they land a giant prisoner transport jet on the Vegas Strip. and they actually go all the way at the end to talk about the casualty count. And it was like, I think the worst of it was they said, oh, a couple sprain, you know, a couple cuts, bruises, and one old man's pacemaker stopped. I believe that was. And this, you're talking about a huge jet landing on the Vegas Strip, and that was the sum total of the casualties. I mean, there's shooting around and working around, seeing like old people in their Buicks get crushed by an airplane, but this was pretty impressive. So. Okay, Alice, take us away.
Okay, movie franchises that you love, but you know you shouldn't.
Franchises, huh?
Franchises.
Yeah.
And I've already talked about Air Bud too much.
You did. All
right, I'll think of something else.
All right, this is pretty easy for me, really. I am going to go with Hellraiser. The first Hellraiser is an amazing movie.
That's right.
One of my
favorite
ones.
Stand proud with that.
They get progressively worse, and I have defended them to more people than I can even imagine. Hellraiser 4, when they go to space, and then when everything blows apart and it's just like random junk going on. Hellraiser 7 or 8, when Hellraiser becomes an online video game. I'll defend them to anybody.
Wow.
Okay. I love them. I'll watch any Hellraiser movie that comes out. I absolutely love the concept. I'll never get enough of them.
All right.
I didn't even care for the first one.
Oh, the first one. My number two horror movie ever made.
That was number one, Suspiria?
Wow. Suspiria, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I pay attention on these podcasts.
Yeah, you know.
I don't play Facebook. <Facebook. laughs>
There will be a quiz. We don't know when. It's coming, folks.
Someday. All right.
Let's see. Well, you know, I just looking over at my shelf right now, I have both Dinotopia the miniseries and Dinotopia the series. So how about that?
That's impressive, Mac.
That sounds good.
I give you two, I guess. One, I wouldn't say I love, but I probably have a lot higher tolerance than other people, and those are the Transformers movies. So I'll probably put that down. But I'll probably defend those to people who look at me with blank stares.
I'll defend the original Transformers movie.
Number two is pretty.
No, the original, the animated one.
I watched that recently. That's rough. Eric Idle is a Transformers
planet.
That has not. The nostalgia has not.
Eric Idle's in it. Leonard Nimoy's in it. That is great stuff.
The only Estelle Getty is the only person missing in that.
Estelle Getty is Bumblebee.
There's a new character, a giant Buick. You know? But I will say that I don't love it. I'm sure people do like it, but I for some reason have grown attached, and this is mainly because Mike Staley keeps sending them to me. The Note series, the Hallmark Hall of Fame series, The Note, starring Ted McGinley and someone else. There's been three movies so far. I've gotten them all. I am unfortunately somewhat emotionally invested in the arc of these characters. There's no turning back. So.
Oh man.
I haven't seen the second and third of these movies in a long time, and maybe this isn't one that I should be embarrassed or care about. But the Naked Gun movies, I think, I remember liking a lot when I saw all three of them. The first one is a legitimate classic.
Two and three have some solid moments.
They have their moments.
I think, barely remember
them. Pia Zadora in the third one. Anna Nicole Smith is in that, right? So
yeah.
And I think that's worthy of defense. Is that everybody? Yeah, I think Alice.
Just Alice.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm going to go with the Resident Evil movies.
Hey.
I know. I've heard you guys talk about them. But for some reason, I've seen every one of them, and I love them. I like Mila Jovovich as this sort of, you know, half whatever she is and strong woman kicking. But I don't know what it is. I watch them, and I go, I know I shouldn't like this. But I enjoyed every one of them, and I am proud to say I will defend it, just like Daryl will those horrible Hellraiser movies.
There's a guy that throws the Cenobite that throws CDs out of his head.
That's my favorite.
Wrong.
That's my favorite one.
Yeah, I never understood Mila Jovovich being a badass when she's like 17 pounds.
Yeah, but see, she's not completely all human. She's
genetically engineered and all that, right?
Exactly. Okay. So it makes
Fair
sense.
Enough.
My problem with those movies have always been they were just totally different from like the video game mythology, I think, right?
Ah, see, I don't know that.
Yes, I don't. So they're just totally, I think they're just totally separate from us.
How many of those are there at this point?
Video games?
No,
there's four.
Movies.
Four?
There's four.
Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping for more.
See, they got to once they get up to 8 or 9, then I could get behind it. It's only when you get to like an 8th and 9th movies of a series will I start watching. Nice. I start with that one.
All right, well, that's it. And on that cheerful note, I guess we will end this edition of the Friday Filibusters. Thank you to Daryl, Mac, Eric, as usual, and Alice for joining us again. And I'm sure we'll have you again sooner rather than later. But we appreciate you.
Good.
Dialing in, and FridayFilibuster @DVDVerdict.com is the email. That is it. So, Mac, take us away.
Time to play.